You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. We made it to the end of another week.
Yeah, man, and I'm glad we did, man. My voice is raspy. excuse me.
He's got a frog in his throat.
Yeah. You know,
I do too. A lot of frogs in here.
So it's Friday. That means Friday's with the one and only Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I got a bit of a frog myself.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Maybe it's catching.
Yeah. So I was
keep my mouth closed.
I had slept with the windows open, and so I just kind of, you know, I haven't had a cold. All year? Have you had a cold? Oh, that's right. You had COVID.
No, I didn't have
COVID. Oh, you didn't have COVID. No. Yeah, have you had a cold all year?
Not really. No.
No. Have you gotten your flu shot yet?
No.
Neither have I. Are you getting one?
I don't know.
See.
It's that risky behavior.
I know. This is Sandy.
I don't know. I'm negligent. I don't not believe in vaccine. I just tend to forget about
it. Did you know? Always... Have you gotten historically flu shots every year?
No.
Over the last 10 years?
To be honest with you, I don't get flu very often. So I don't know. I'm probably rolling the dice, but I just don't feel like I can't remember. I got COVID twice, I think, so far. But I haven't gotten the flu very often.
You know, I was a person who historically never really... contracted the flu, and I got a flu shot for the first time, I think, 2 years ago. I haven't gotten another flu shot. I mean, they certainly say for people of your and my age demographic, we should get the flu shot. I don't, you know, I'm wrestling with, why am I not getting it? What is happening in my mind?
It's macho. It's macho not to get the shots. I think that's it, basically. It's not sensible. It doesn't hurt. I don't get much side effect. I do know some people who've had the shots and feel terrible for a couple of days.
So I guess I'm asking you, are we being influenced by...
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
Well, and just the conversations that have been going on since COVID.
You know, maybe
in the recesses of our mind, we've kind of been co-opted.
I don't know. I but to be honest with you, I was negligent about getting flu shots long before the discussion that related to COVID. I just have always thought I didn't get the flu, didn't need the shots. Who knows? Those are probably my famous last words.
Sandy
died of the flu.
Well, I mean, you and I mean, I'm in the same category. Okay.
Well, you were we were saying off the air, you said one of the things to talk about was this question of why men don't live as long as women. And, you know, asked me why, and I said, it's genetics, it has to do with childbearing years, and women much less likely to die from heart attack or whatever during their childbearing years. But you said it's risky conduct. So here you go, the two of us.
Well, you know, Sandy, we aren't alone. And so I'm just wondering if a lot of times, you know, I talk about the younger people being influenced by conversations and by others, you know, because I know that 2 years ago when I went and had my flu shot and my COVID shots, I went in head held high and I marched right in, and
Well, you could be, you know, you could have something about the subconscious, because there used to be a form of very nefarious advertising. It was called subliminal advertising. And at movies, they would put into the frames, they would put like Coca-Cola or something that, right. that would flash by. You wouldn't see it in your conscious, but your subconscious would see that little Coca-Cola burst, you know, because it would just be one of the frames of the film, and it would be going through, and the film would look like it maybe stuttered just a little bit at that point. And it had an effect. People would run off and buy Coca-Cola at the time in the movie when this thing showed. And that was called subliminal advertising. And it was kind of advertising you didn't even realize you were receiving. You just accepted it, and your subconscious told you. And maybe, you know, listening to all this chatter, even though we're not of a kind to agree with it, maybe it does have an impact on us. It probably does.
It is the subconscious. There's no question whatsoever. Because I remember you and I and everybody during those really severe COVID years, and before, you know, they kind of got COVID under control somewhat, we religiously went and got our vaccinations.
Yeah.
And I remember talking with you 2-3. Did you get yours? Well, yeah, at Moderna. And so, yeah, I had my little card, and man, I was not missing.
Right.
And I remember going to.
Well, also, I do think, you know, and at that time, we didn't know just how fatal the disease was. And, you know, we lived through it. And so, you know, the danger you live through becomes less dangerous. And so, you know, the risk level that we assign to it now today has gone down in our minds. And maybe the severity of the disease has moderated over time. I don't know. But, you know, it's something that's become more of a norm. And it has been redefined by the CDC so that it is now defined in the same category as influenza.
Well, you know, the reason I wanted, and while we're at this, we can talk about it a little more, is tuberculosis, whooping cough, all these other, you know, diseases that were basically
tuberculosis,
arrested.
I don't think there is a vaccine for tuberculosis, but okay. I think they arrested it by catching it very early with those TB tests we used to get, the little blisters.
Right.
They probably, I don't know if they still give them in schools, but they were mandatory when we were in kids in school. You'd get the TB test every 6 months or so. And the problem with TB was that it was kind of a hidden disease while it was communicable for a long time until symptoms showed. And by arresting it very early, they stopped its communication broadly. And so that worked. That was similar to smallpox. It was a potential healthcare disaster that was averted by essentially mandatory processes.
Well, whooping cough.
Yeah.
Whooping cough is making the comeback.
Well, and polio is making
polio
a comeback
is
in
making
third,
a comeback.
Third world countries.
Right. So you just wonder. I mean, and so I'm honest with you, I'm wrestling with, hey man, am I gonna go in and get the flu shot? And even if I go in and get the flu shot, am I going to then follow up and get the COVID shot? And just the fact that it's even questionable,
yeah,
is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So why is that, right?
Yeah.
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 That's a good question.
Yeah. 844-967-2789. Hey, Calvin, write down this date. Sandy said that's a good question.
Well, I would guess that it is a bit of a macho thing too, to eschew the need for vaccination. No, I'm a tough guy. I don't need that. To be honest with you, that probably goes on in my head a little bit.
So you think women are more likely to go and get the vaccinations than men?
I bet you if you went out and did a survey of it, that would be my guess. That's an uneducated guess. It's an intuition.
Well, that, you know, it's something that really gives some thought, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe that's another reason why men don't live as long.
Well, so here we go. Here we go. Why men don't live as long as women. It's the testosterone, don't you know? That's basically what this article says. You just pointed that out before we even got into the testosterone.
Huh.
So it says, years ago when I was conducting my doctoral research on the evolutionary history of men among a remote indigenous community of hunter-gatherers living in the forests of South America, I came across a man donning a well-worn baseball cap likely donated by missionaries. The cap read, "There are three stages to a man's life. Stud." Well, Sandy, I think.
Let's just go through the three.
Dud.
Yeah.
And thud.
Well, you know, it is true. There's this goofy thing on the internet, been on the internet a long time, called the Darwin Awards. And the Darwin Award is given to people who die in the most ridiculous fashions. You know, the people who do the stupidest thing that results in their death. And I've never seen a Darwin Award video.
To a woman.
For a woman.
Indeed, it is somewhat sobering to see one's life research summarized on a piece of headwear that can probably be found for a few dollars at a roadside truck stop. But such is the elegance of interesting science. It's no secret that the mortality due to accidents and risky behavior, you know, men driving recklessly and fast and skydiving.
Well, and gun violence.
And gun violence. And it's no secret that mortality due to accidents and risky behavior is much higher in young men, particularly those in their late teenage years and early 20s. Sandy, I think we're a little bit beyond that. This, by the way, is not news to insurance companies. It's also true that men die earlier than women, regardless of their environment or lifestyle, and are often more susceptible to some cancers and heart diseases at an earlier age. In fact, men are at a higher risk than women when it comes to most of the top 15 contributing sources of mortality in the United States, which account for nearly 80% of all deaths. That's really an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
So when we come back, Sandy and I are going to spend some...
If we live through this... I've got some risky ideas for the
We're going to spend some real time talking about, you know, the economy and, you know, the average income and all of those things.
Yeah, Tom, Dick, and Mary's budget reanalyzed based on the most recent census data.
And who can fix that? 844-967-2789. It's a Friday edition of The Earl Ingram Show with my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
My life is filled with gloom, so day after day I stay locked up in my room. I know to you it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy Williams,
well,
the temptations, I wish it would rain.
Well, we got a drought ongoing here. So all the music is basically a plea for rain, you know, or at least a recognition of the importance of rain.
Yeah.
When I started looking for music about rain, there's a lot of music about rain, turns out. Maybe it's this Aboriginal kind of thing. We all have to wish for rain sometimes.
Well, I got to tell you, I like the list. Yeah. The list is, you know, really, really a great list. Let me, Sandy, let's get right into you. You've done some research.
Well, yeah. About a couple of years ago on the show, I did the research at that time to figure out what the median income for a family in Wisconsin was, and then to look at average costs that they faced. And when you did that, you realized that the median family, the middle-class family, was behind the eight ball. And so I decided to update that for the most recent census data, and they remain behind the eight ball. And the reason for this is not something you can lay at the feet of the Biden administration, or that it was caused or cured by the Trump administration. It's been an ongoing event. So let me just do this kind of slowly. I'll go through the numbers. But the median family income in Wisconsin for the average household, which includes two breadwinners, is $75,000. I rounded it just so we don't have to talk about pennies. The single person median income is $45,500. The average tax in Wisconsin on $75,000 of income is $18,500. That leaves a net income of $56,500 to use to pay for the necessities. The average three-bedroom rent, which would be the average size dwelling unit that would be required for a family of three and a half, which is the average size family, is $18,000 a year. The average health care cost for a family of four in Wisconsin, and this is before deductibles, is $18,000 a year. The average total utility bill is $6,000 a year. The average annual auto cost, and this is kind of variable, but it was clear that it was greater than $14,000 a year. The average cell phone and internet bill for a year is $3,400. So you add those up, and those expenditures, and we haven't talked about child daycare. The average child daycare cost is $12,500 per child. But if you don't have child daycare, you're still spending $59,400 on these hard necessities. And may I remind you that that includes no food, no education savings, no 401k set aside.
No clothing.
No clothing, nothing, no entertainment. These are just the hard costs that you'd have, the first things you'd put down when you were setting up a budget for a family, that are the absolute fixed costs. And so they don't make it. They're $3,000 behind the eight ball on these things. So clearly they have to decide which bills to pay, or the fact that they would get less than bronze or silver health care insurance. They'd have to find much subpar housing, much less than average quality housing, to try and solve for this problem. A tax cut doesn't solve the problem. A 10% tax cut for this family would save them $1,850. They're already $3,000 in the hole. So, I mean, a tax cut is throwing a bone to these people. And the problem for the median family is that we have set up our economy in such a way that these benefits that they're paying for, particularly health care, is coming out of their income after they get paid, not before. And so, that's a very big problem. And so I think what politically needs to happen is people need to start looking at this situation and figuring out which candidate speaks to them about this. Because it isn't food that causes this problem. An increased price of food makes it even harder for this family. But this number and this deficit occurs before they buy food. So, I mean, it's a serious problem. Tom, Dick, and Mary have a serious problem. They probably don't talk about it because they're embarrassed to be making in the neighborhood of $75,000 and still not able to make it. But the fact is that Wisconsin families, when polled, suggested that they need at least $85,000 to make it, and they're right. They do need at least $85,000. They need more than $85,000 a year as a household if they have children and child daycare costs, if child daycare costs aren't subsidized in some fashion.
So those numbers just present a myriad of questions on my side of things. Number one, Sandy, who's going to fix that?
Well, I mean, it can't be fixed in an instant, but it needs to be addressed by government. The things that can certainly be addressed by government are the areas that are subject to being handled by government as they are in other countries, like child daycare, like healthcare costs. If this family didn't have $18,000 of healthcare costs, they'd make it.
Furthermore, that wasn't created yesterday. That's been an ongoing issue that just continued to build over decades.
Well, it built,
and it hasn't been addressed.
Right, it built because of the third-party payor, the undisciplined payor system we had, where the insurance payors have an incentive to receive more premiums every year because it increases their profit. Yeah, we have a healthcare system that's 50% more expensive per capita than the next most expensive healthcare system, and we have some of the lowest availability of healthcare per capita in terms of doctor visits by individuals in the world.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we are going to continue this subject on the other side. We're going to delve even deeper. You can join us. It's Friday. That means Fridays. Excuse me, with my co-host Sandy Williams.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know,
singing in the Sandy,
rain. Yeah, you know, Sandy and I have a really fascinating conversation off the air that we're going to have on the air. You guys should really, phone lines open as always at 844-967-2789. We can do it alone. It was always better with you. But we were talking about some things. And as Sandy was, if you're just joining us, Sandy was went through a litany of cost that the average middle-class family of four.
Well, the median family with two breadwinners and 1.5 children, so they had a family of 3.5, doesn't exist. But and when you take into account their rent cost of $18,000, their average healthcare cost of $18,000, the average utility cost of $6,000, the cell phone and internet cost of $3,400, the average annual auto cost of more than $14,000. And if their taxes, the average tax cost on that in Wisconsin is $18,500, they end up having $59,400 of costs before they spend any money on food or education or clothing or anything else. And they have $56,500 of net income. Okay. And so you could cut their taxes by 10%. They're still in the hole. And the fact is that the main thing that sticks out here is this healthcare cost. If they didn't have that healthcare cost, or if they didn't have $12,500 per child of child daycare costs when they have children, these people could have, their head could be above water, but it's underwater.
So Sandy, $18,000 basically a year for housing, you can barely afford a home at $18,000, that's apartment, that's renting.
Yeah, that's the average cost of renting a three-bedroom unit in Wisconsin.
Not owning.
Not owning. Okay. And so owning, I don't know what owning the average cost is today.
But I know, but it's a whole lot more than that.
Yeah. So what happens is this family has to find subpar housing. They have to find housing at the low end of what is comprising the average. They have to really pinch and save, and they have to probably use a credit card until they can't. You know, that we talk about the credit card usage, and these people are in a corner. They're looking for ways to survive. Many people, the single household median income is $45,500. There are considerable numbers of individuals earning less than $35,000. And in that $75,000 household with two breadwinners, it's unquestionably likely that one of them earns more than 40 and one of them earns less than 30, okay? And so these incomes suggest that they don't get benefits. Too many people in Wisconsin are working 34-hour work weeks on hourly wages. And the reason they work 34-hour work weeks is their employer insists on it, so they don't have to pay benefits.
So 25% of the American people make $35,000 and less. Try to wrap your mind around that figure. 25% of the American people make $35,000 or less. So, Sandy.
So, I mean, the minimum wage is, in fact, an important number. It's become an important number because many businesses, particularly in the service industry, which is the biggest employment portion of our economy right now, many people in the service industry are earning hourly wages that are gauged against the minimum wage. And so, you know, what we need to do, I think, when we are looking politically at who we're going to vote for, is we have to start focusing on who's going to help us with these problems. Because what's happened is these people who are behind the eight ball like this are angry, okay? They're angry and frustrated. They're frightened. And Donald Trump is tapping into their anger, and he's reflecting their anger. And they're attracted to him, even though the only thing he promises is a tax cut or a tariffs, which will increase prices even more. So his policies aren't going to help these people whatsoever. And it's been Republican Party policies over the years which have withdrawn, for instance, the notion that corporate employers would be paying healthcare benefits. This 34-hour number is a legislatively set number. It's, you know, the healthcare system has been controlled by the federal government in a manner that's been controlled by the healthcare system itself, the healthcare lobby, and the Republican Party, who's been cooperating with them. And so there's, you know, when you look at who's going to help these people, they need to think about
it. So you're disputing the rising tide lift all boats theories.
Well, that's trickle down.
Yeah, I know. So look, that other 25% of the American people that nobody ever talks about, that, you know, and many of them work every day. And so nobody championing their causes because they're invisible. And so they live in those houses. You said the average one,
three bedroom cost is $18,000.
But I want to talk about the heat
average utility bill.
Average utility bill.
$6,000.
So when the people who make $35,000 and less, they live in places that certainly are not airtight.
Right.
And that $6,000 jumps to $12,000 and more sometimes, because those places where people are living are really deplorable.
Well, I will say that if you look back historically, there was a time when both sides of the aisle looked at problems realistically. So Medicare was a bipartisan bill. It was passed in recognition of the fact that when you're 65 and older and you've retired from your business, who was providing you with health care through your business back then, that you needed to have health care insurance, but you weren't going to be able to get it privately, because when you're 65 and older, your actuarial risk of having lots of medical costs is very high. So on a bipartisan basis, our government step forward and set up Medicare in recognition of a real issue. Well, what we need now is a bipartisan recognition of the real issues faced by middle-income people in our society and in our economy as it has become designed or as its architecture has evolved.
So what would you say to those who say, it wasn't that way under Donald Trump?
Well, it was
Donald Trump.
Well, it was this way under Donald Trump.
I know, but people are going to.
I can go back and show you the data.
Well, yes, because this has been going on longer than.
Well, the data that I revealed before was Donald Trump era data. The one that had a median income of $65,000, et cetera, had exactly the same outcome. It's just that the numbers were a little different. But the fact is that if you look at I spent the weekend looking at, or the week looking at data from an analysis of both partisan and more nonpartisan analysis of the U.S. economies under Biden and Trump. I looked at that was presented by some of the partisan press, but also by The Economist, by Al Jazeera, by offshore people trying to analyze the situation. And their analysis of the situation would show that Biden has produced more jobs. Even if you take the bump, if you take the effect of COVID and move the numbers to reflect that, Biden has produced more jobs. There was a diminution in real income during the first 2 years of Biden. There has been a growth in real income in the second 1.5 year of Biden based on the elimination of inflation. The inflation that was experienced was a worldwide inflation, and the diminution in real income in the United States was far less than the reduction in real income experienced in other countries around the world. And with respect to all the other indices, Biden has really exceeded Donald Trump, and that's been reflected by the analysis of lots of people. It's not a victory that is clear.
Clear, you're right.
All right. So it's better than Donald Trump. It's not worse than Donald Trump. That's the point. Or if anything, if you want to take a partisan look at it and try to analyze the numbers, you'll have to come up with the conclusion that it's a tie, okay? That both administrations have basically put the country in the same kind of situation. We did have an inflation which caused some prices to go up, but real income has gone up now. And so, you know, these numbers reflect an increase in prices for a variety of things, like the average income has gone up, median income has gone up. Some of the other costs have gone up, but it has the same net effect.
All right, let's go to David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Hey, good morning. So I guess for starters, the United States is the world's reserve currency. So when you say the world, you know, there's inflation throughout the world, keep in mind the United States, with its monetary policy, has the biggest impact on all the banks around the world. Can we agree on that?
No.
No. Can you at least agree on that?
I don't agree with that. No, I don't agree with that because the each of the economies and the inflations within each country have everything to do with what goes on in the country. The value of the dollar got stronger during that time period, okay? So that would have had a deflationary effect.
But let me ask the question, David. What does that have to do with the fact that that so many people in this nation are struggling?
So I would look at it this way. The middle class is definitely struggling, and the lower class is even worse off because, you know, you may not agree with this, Andy, but we did have the highest inflation in 40 years.
This was happening long before the inflation.
That's my point of the earlier analysis that I did. It's been this situation has existed with the middle class being behind the eight ball since probably 2012. It's been a long-term change and evolution in the architecture of the economy. And food costs aren't even included in this number that I provided that shows the negative balance that is faced by the family. No, I mean, there's no question that, and we did have, an inflationary period, and the inflation has a cause that, you know, we can argue about the factors involved with it, But there's no question that the United States would have experienced inflation if Donald Trump had been reelected because of the effect of the bottlenecks in the supply chain, the shortages that were occurred, the pent-up demand. Donald Trump couldn't have inoculated the United States against the inflation that was experienced in the rest of the world.
So, David, we're going to give you a chance. You can hang on. But I just want to say that this is not about that this all occurred just 3 years ago because of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. These issues, $18,000, for health insurance, $18,000 for housing. All of these things have occurred, David, over decades, and they've piled up on one another. And this again, rising tides lift all boats belief from the Republican Party. It's part and parcel of why we're there. I'll give you a chance on the other side. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. We're going to continue the conversation. You can join us.
Singing in the rain.
Well, you know, Sandy, this is going to have all of us crying tears, and there'll be rain.
Yeah, we need moisture, any and all kinds.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, because that's Otis Redding, I think.
No, that's the Teskey Brothers, one of my favorite groups. It's a couple of brothers from Australia who do great blues.
Well, he sounded a little bit like Otis Redding. Yeah. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. We're talking about, again, what really should be one of the top subjects, and that it really should be right at the top of the list in the election.
Here's what I suggest is that we, you and I, and then whoever call in from this point forward on this show, not talk about what caused these problems, okay? Because it's a whole range of things, and it's been an evolution since the 1990s of how our economy has evolved to the point where this is the situation. But I think what we should do is restrict our conversation and our callers' conversations to what are the programs to solve these problems? Not did Joe Biden cause it, not did Donald Trump cause them during his term, or did he not cause them, but this is the situation, and what, if any, government program should we be considering, and what politically should we be considering to deal with it?
All right. Let's go back to Dave from Mequon. Go ahead, David.
All right. So going forward, the idea is that we got to come up with another government program to take care of housing, to take care of medical. And at the end of the day, the amount of money that the federal government is going to continue to spend, keep in mind, there's one or two things that the federal government can continue to do. Spend more and borrow more. It can't create as far as...
Well, David, and more revenue, David. Well, you left out revenue.
Well, wait, David. So there are a couple of things. One, we could tax people who are capable of paying more taxes and add more revenue. We could reallocate how we spend our money. We could reevaluate the defense budget, for instance, and figure out how much of that is vital. Furthermore, programs to help this might not necessarily cost so much money. You know, our government created our healthcare system, okay? And we have a novel one. It's different than any healthcare system anywhere else in the world in terms of at least the way it's financed. And also, housing. You know, housing has been filled with incentives always in terms of the depreciation rates allowed. Our taxes have long included methods for either promoting various kinds of housing. Now, you do give up some income, future income, out of tax incentives associated with new housing, but it might not be a net reduction in total taxes because the housing might not even come into place and might not even pay any taxes in the circumstance of not having the incentives. So I think Republicans would be the first to argue, certainly Republican lobbyists would be the first to argue that some tax incentives actually do pay for themselves.
David, go ahead.
Some of them do, yes. But at the end of the day, again, we're talking about, you know, when you look at the Affordable Care Act, the amount of subsidies that are given to people are significant if they are definitely below the median income. The people that are paying for that are people that are above the median income. And I mean, I can tell you, a friend of mine, it's catastrophic amount of money for health insurance because he does not get any benefits. So essentially, it'd be like going to the restaurant.
You've identified a situation. What should we do about our healthcare system? You're identifying simply how broken it is, and it is very broken. But what should we be doing about the health? We certainly can't solve the healthcare system by cutting it loose and having it be totally privatized with a totally privatized insurance system, because I bet that your friend wouldn't even qualify for insurance.
So I believe in free market. Apparently, you believe that there has to be government intervention in everything.
I don't believe in that. But, you know, insurance has always been regulated. It's regulated at the state level. There's an insurance commission in all 50 states, and they regulate, for instance, automobile insurance and the ability of automobile insurers to deny coverage to people, for instance. And one of the things that the Affordable Care Act was simply the same thing that insurance commissions do all the time, which is to determine whether an insurance policy can deny coverage for certain things. And the primary benefit that was provided by the Affordable Care Act was to deny insurance companies the right to deny coverage for existing conditions. And without that requirement, people with existing conditions would never be able to get insurance in this country.
So
under a free market.
So we can talk about the free market. There are people in the society who can't function, who aren't able to make it in the system, David. What do we do? Do we just do away with them? Other societies have found a way to at least address those people.
Well,
they're citizens of those nations. And so we can't say for the weakest amongst us who can't survive,
we'll talk about it on the way back, because this argument that is made by conservatives that what we need is free market. Yeah, we do need free markets. I'm a firm believer in them, but not everything can be operated under a free market. We need antitrust policies.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. Hang on the phone lines, guys. It's Friday. It means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.